Vegas, Truth Frequency Radio.
Appreciate you guys tuning in and being part of the program. Obsidian in the chat room saying I sound different today. How do I sound different today? I'm jacked up on coffee, Ob. I don't know what else would be different about me today. But I'm very excited to talk to Stan Deo. So sometimes when I get excited, I get a little giddy, and that's probably what's going on. Rat meow. But anyway, definitely appreciate you guys being here. Definitely want to recommend you guys support Truth Frequency Radio. If you have a couple of dollars you can throw their way, keep us at the top of the pile in terms of alternative news and information, as well as if you guys could support redpillreports.com as well by sharing it with your friends, that would be very, very appreciated. We'd really like that. We also want to talk to you guys a little bit about carrot bars. It's not something I mentioned enough on the radio show right now, but you know, we're going to have Stan Deo on today. Stan Deo is kind of a preparatory expert as well. I mean, he's an expert in so many different things, it's kind of ridiculous. But one of the things that he is definitely a proponent of is being prepared for anything that's going to be happening, you know, coming down the pike here. And having gold. Having gold is definitely a good way to do it. Carat Bars is an amazing, amazing company out of Germany. They sell gold in small increments, 1, 2.5, and 5 grams. And you can get involved. They also have an affiliate program. So if you're really interested in gold and want to start working working towards that as a business opportunity, you can definitely do that as well. There's a banner at the top of redpillreports.com for Carat Bars. You can also just send us an email at contact, and we will get in touch with you and let you guys know everything that we know about it. And I can't tell you, I've been involved with them for about 6 months now and could not be happier, could not be more impressed. Every time I hear something from the company, it's like better news than the last time. Like, I think the most recent news that I've heard was that they bought their own gold mine. I mean, that's pretty incredible if you really think about it. As you know, they are essentially monopolizing the gold world in terms of small increments of gold. So we want to be on board with those guys forever and happy to be on board with them. And if you guys want to get on board with them as well, we can help you do that. So please give us a contact or shoot me an email at redpillreports.com. JD at redpillreports.com will get you through to my email, and we can talk about carrot bars. Tell you what, having gold right now, especially given all the things that are going on in the economy globally right now, I can't tell you how glad I am to have a little bit of gold sitting around, just because, just in case, it's never going to go away. So anyway, that's what I know about that. That's what's going on with the website, and that is what's going on with the show today. So I mentioned that Richard would be on the show tomorrow, so I think that covers everything. We are going to jump into the international news for those of you who are new listeners out there. During the first hour, we like to go over all the pertinent news from around the world, lots of things going on all the time. And we list all of these articles at redpillreports.com under the show section. There's always going to be a show section at the top of redpillreports.com. It's going to outline for you guys who the guest is for the day. You can find all of the information that you might want to know about Stan Deo. And you can also then follow along with some of the articles that we're going to try and cover for you guys here. But just to give you guys a heads up, on some of the articles that you guys are missing, if you don't go to redpillreports.com, and this, I'm going to try and get to this one today, but if I don't, I'll apologize in advance. But this is the title. Let's listen to, this is the kind of title of an article that you're not going to get anyplace else unless you come here, ladies and gentlemen. That's the bottom line. This title pretty much says it all. A diaper-wearing service kangaroo was kicked out of a Wisconsin McDonald's. Where do I even go from here, ladies and gentlemen? A diaper-wearing service kangaroo was kicked out of a Wisconsin McDonald's. I don't even have to say anything else about that. That's the most ridiculous headline I've ever read in my life. And there are many more like that from around the world today. But wow, what do you even say about that? I didn't even know there was such a thing as a service kangaroo. But apparently they're not welcome in Wisconsin McDonald's. Anyway, we'll get to that probably in the second news segment, which is at the bottom of the hour, after the bottom of the hour, after that break. But anyway, let's get on to some more serious news right now, as I maybe the plight of the diaper-wearing service kangaroo is not important enough to really merit a discussion. So, okay, moving into some international news. There was a very, very tragic incident that took place yesterday in Taiwan. There was a TransAsia airline that crashed into a river. It was carrying just south of 60 people, but it was actually caught. This entire crash was caught on a dash cam footage, and it's absolutely astounding. This plane, I should have prefaced this also by saying in the show section at redpillreports.com, underneath all of the news articles, we always try and put a featured video, just something that you guys might not have caught or seen. And I went ahead and I put the video from this plane crash down at the bottom of the show section today at redpillreports.com, so you can go see this video that we're talking about. But again, this plane comes in, and it was caught on a dash cam as a car was driving down the highway. And it's unusual because the articles are saying that the jet, you know, nearly hit the highway, but it absolutely clipped the highway. It actually clips a van. There's a person driving in a van, and you got to give a lot of props to the person in the van for being able to keep it on the road, because I'm telling you, this plane comes in, it's a big twin prop job, and it comes in low over the highway and decides that it's going to try and bank very, very sharply, and it banks almost, you know, 90 degrees to where its wing is completely straight down towards the ground, flying in over this highway, and it clips a van and then continues to come down and clips the wing on the embankment wall of the highway there. Just absolutely amazing. Apparently, they're saying right now at least 23 people were killed. Absolutely tragic thing. But the fact that it was caught on dash cam is pretty unusual, and it's definitely worth watching just to see. make you wanna maybe not take the TransAsia flight anytime soon. Maybe that's just me, but that's what it did when I watched it. I thought, you know what, I'm good on the ground. I don't really need to go flying around in the air. But anyway, that's what's going on there. The United States is sticking it to Venezuela right now. The Venezuela government saying that new U.S. sanctions are hypocritical, and the United States officially imposed new sanctions on Venezuela as of Monday this week amid accusations from President Maduro that Washington is trying to destabilize his country. And I'll tell you what, his country is effectively destabilized right now. I'm wondering a little bit about what our motive is behind putting all of these sanctions onto Venezuela. But these new sanctions expand the number of Venezuelan government officials barred from entering the United States, And these restrictions will also affect the immediate family members of a number of those individuals subject to visa restrictions for believed involvement in human rights abuses or for acts of corruption. This is, of course, according to the State Department spokesman or spokeswoman Jan Psaki, who won't even go there right now. But okay, so she's essentially saying that the reason we're putting more sanctions on Venezuela is because some of these public members of the government and the corporations there are involved in corruption. So pot, you guys are black, apparently. So Psaki continued by stating that we will not publicly identify these individuals because of U.S. visa confidentiality laws, but we are sending a clear message to the human rights abusers and those who profit from public corruption that their families are not welcome in the United States. And if that's true, I think that there are probably a lot of people that we need to go ahead and kick out of the country. Again, a lot of people we could probably peg as human rights abusers, George Bush, excuse me, and also the people who are involved with public corruption and profiting from corruption. Wouldn't that pretty much be every single person in Washington, D.C. wearing a tie right now? I mean, shouldn't all of those people be barred from the traveling to the United States, according to Mrs. Psaki here? Anyway, Maduro hit back at the announcement, and he accused the United States government of hypocrisy. He goes on to say that we kill black youth in the street with impunity. We persecute and have concentration camps of Central American kids in Guantanamo. And we have abducted dozens of citizens around the world under no known legal system, submitting them to torture, isolation, et cetera, ad nauseum. And you know what? Kind of making good points there, Mr. Maduro. Kind of making good points. I'm pretty astounded that we're, again, still trying to stick it to Venezuela right now. It seems like we should maybe be, I don't know, trying to fix our own darn country. Who knows? Norway. Some news coming out of Norway right now. They are expanding. They have a law there in Norway where it essentially is illegal to beg in the streets. You're not allowed to ask for money. You're not allowed to ask for food or anything like that. And you can be arrested in Oslo for doing exactly that. But they now are moving to expand the law so that they can arrest anyone who is offering help to those people. So if you are actually caught giving money or giving food, there's a lot of people over there, advocacy groups that actually bring homeless people into their homes, and some of that might actually be deemed illegal under this new expansion of the law in Norway. But again, you know, we're seeing this happening all over the world right now where people are just cracking down on humanity via legislation. You know, I did read a great story, and this is kind of off subject right now, but remember the pastor who was arrested in, I think it was in Fort Lauderdale for feeding the homeless? He was cited on a number of occasions for feeding the homeless, and then they eventually arrested him. He is suing the city right now, and he's actually got a lawyer on board right now, and hopefully they're going to sue the crap out of that city and get some justice for some of these people, because I think that as we see the legislative agenda coming down on humanity with either austerity measures or outlawing the ability to reach out with a helping hand to help your countrymen and your brothers and sisters, this is not the right way to be going about trying to fix the planet. You know, we're outlawing humanity at this point, and they're moving ahead with it in Norway. So if you're in Norway, maybe a good opportunity to try and get involved. I don't know. Here's some really good news though, and this is coming out of Croatia. I love this story. Love it, love it, love it. This is an absolutely unprecedented move going on in Croatia right now. Croatia granted what they called a fresh start to 60,000 citizens. Okay. This is an unprecedented move. As I said, many hope will help jumpstart an economy plagued by years of recession, but Croatia on Monday wiped out the personal debt for roughly 60,000 of its poorest citizens. So the government program called Fresh Start aims to help some of the 317,000 Croatians whose bank accounts have been blocked because of unpaid bills. Under the terms of this plan, individuals' debt must be lower than about $5,100, and his or her monthly income should not be higher than about $138. And those applying for debt cancellation are not allowed to own any property or have any savings. But Deputy Prime Minister told a cabinet meeting last month that they expect roughly 60,000 citizens will be applicable, and this, they say, will be given a chance for a new start without the burden of debt. And according to the Washington Post, the Croatian government has convinced multiple cities, public and private companies, the country's major telecommunications providers, as well as 9 banks to support the plan and absorb the debt. The government will not be refunding the companies for their losses. The Post goes on and says, overall, the debt of the Croats amounts to about $4.11 billion, and the debt that is about to be wiped out of accounts accounts for less than 1% of that. However, for those who are eligible, the agreement will make a significant difference by enabling them to gain access to their bank accounts and by reducing debts that, again, by reducing debt by less than 1%, Croatia actually is freeing 20% of the country's debtors from their obligations. And for a country that has suffered 6 years of recession in a row, Prime Minister said this is the first time that any Croatian government has tried to actually solve this problem, and they are very proud of it. And this rare move obviously comes at a time when other EU governments continue to burden their poorest residents with ongoing austerity. So, man, I have to tell you, well, I really hope this is a sign of things to come. This makes so much sense to me. I really hope that that is the first of many places that are going to start getting rid of the debt, because none of this debt is real. It's all fake. Everything is fake, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, a Spanish nuclear power plant was shut down following an electrical failure, according to local media on Tuesday. Strong winds, accordingly, knocked out power to the northeast of the country there. In Spain, operations at the Vandellós 2, which is a 1,000-megawatt nuclear power station located in Catalonia, Spain, brought to a halt Tuesday afternoon. They do say that it was just because of the electrical shortage, didn't cause any harm to the environment or the plant's workers, and they say once the power is restored, plant will be back online. They do go on to say that all safety systems worked as they should have. So that's good news for the people of Spain. But if you're in Spain and you don't have power right now, well, you're probably not listening to my radio show, so you probably wouldn't know that I was talking to you anyway. But anyway, maybe power will be coming back soon to you guys out there. Huge story coming out of Donetsk again. Another hospital was shelled, multiple casualties being reported. This is, again, more violence occurring on the eastern side of Ukraine. Artillery shelling, according to local authorities, at a hospital there and a rebel stronghold in Donetsk. One person killed. Initial reports feared over 15 were actually dead in the attack, but the midday barrage also damaged a residential building nearby and a high-voltage power line, according to the city council, and the entire neighborhood is currently without power. Donetsk is a stronghold of forces opposed to the Kiev government, and it's been under artillery fire pretty much on a daily basis since middle of last week. And the attacks continued, even though the shaky ceasefire announced in September didn't seem to take hold, because obviously in the fighting intensified in January when that truce seemed to collapse. Kiev routinely claims that the rebels themselves target civilians in order to frame their opponents, which is that's a page right out of Israel's handbook there. But anyway, a number of reports from the international human rights organizations like Amnesty International confirm that at least some of the attacks did come from the Ukrainian side. So again, we're still seeing violence in the eastern side of Ukraine between Kiev and the Donetsk region there. Probably not going to get any better anytime soon. We've been talking about the increase in troops. The rebels want to try and enlist 5 new brigades of people so that they can, you know, continue to fight against Kiev. Kiev's having a lot of trouble getting people to join their military right now because, again, you can't pay people to go kill their brothers and sisters. There's just not enough money in the world available to that. So what are they going to do? They're going to bring in foreigners. They're going to bring in mercenaries like Academy and things like that to handle the real nitty-gritty stuff that they're just not going to be able to pay people to do. So I think we'll see more violence in the eastern Ukraine here coming up. There's been a pretty startling revelation coming out of Mr. Massawi, who Zacharias Massawi, of course, is the one of the guys who's allegedly been involved or was involved with the 9/11 terror organization or the 9/11 terror attack on New York City. But he has now revealed a very strong connection between the terrorist group, his Al-Qaeda, and the Saudi royal family in the 1990s. And more notably, he alleges that Saudi princes and terrorists actually discussed a plan to shoot Air Force One out of the sky. These revelations came in the form of a testimony delivered from a maximum security prison where Zacharias Massawi is currently incarcerated. According to the New York Times, he submitted this claim on his own initiative. He sent a letter to the judge presiding over the lawsuit filed by family members on 9/11 and against the government of Saudi Arabia. And so for 2 days last October, lawyers were permitted for the first time to interview the terrorist at the federal prison, which is the most secure facility in the federal system, which is in Florence, Colorado. He gave a damning report that included very prominent members within the royal family, including 3 princes that he says were all Al-Qaeda donors. And the testimony was just finalized this week as of Monday. The meeting discussed the plan to down Air Force One allegedly took place at the kingdom's embassy in Washington, D.C., and this and other meetings allegedly involved some of Saudi Arabia's top princes and billionaires, including then Prince Salman, brother to the late King Abdullah and now King of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi's testimony holds up. The view of Saudi involvement in the attacking of the United States and its alleged double dealings could be changed pretty profoundly. And I have to pause here for a second. We've had a lot of stories about this. I think it's, 29 redacted pages of funding that the Senate is trying to get, or that the Congress is trying to get access to right now, that the NSA or the CIA, one of these alphabet agencies, has got a redacted report that does outline where the funding for 9/11 came from. And from the reports that I've seen, it pretty clearly points a pretty darn big finger at Saudi Arabia. And again, this is not conjecture. This is things that has been flushed out a lot of times over the last few years. But it would be unusual now to find out that that current head or the current king of Saudi Arabia had essentially 25 years ago launched a plan to try and shoot Air Force One out of the sky, and definitely would make it more difficult to pursue a good relationship with him. But again, we see Obama going there all the time. Obama was just there a couple of weeks ago, I believe, which shows pretty strong ties continuing to exist between the two countries. And the world right now is continuing to blast Saudi Arabia and its international partners for the atrocious human rights situations that still persist there right now. I think they've already killed 5 people this year, executed 5 people by beheading, I think, this year. That's pretty, I don't know, that's pretty substantial. We are very, very tight with Saudi Arabia. I mean, the Bushes consider themselves to be part of the royal family of Saudi Arabia. That's not conjecture. That's a known thing. So did Saudi Arabian princes plan to down Air Force One with a missile? I think that's probably pretty accurate. And the fact that the FBI wasn't at the head of this whole initiative makes it a little bit more credible in my mind. The fact that we would be finding out about it now, and it wasn't like the FBI was trying to find Al-Qaeda supporters to provide missiles to so that they could do this. The fact that it wasn't a nurtured event, the fact that it sounds like this was taking place behind the scenes and for a long time, lends a lot of credibility to it. And again, you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt, because of course this guy is on, incarcerated for terrorism right now, and he's going to say anything he can to try and shirk some responsibility, I guess. But at the same time, you just don't know, and it would not surprise me if there were some collusion going on behind the scenes. And anyway, a little bit of economic news, kind of. North Korea and Russia have now established a joint business council. So they have taken a step moving forward following Moscow's setting up of a business council for cooperation with North Korea. This will help Russia and North Korea reach their $1 billion trade goal. The new council will help pair Russian companies with business partners in North Korea to work on trade and investment. Annual trade between Moscow and Pyongyang is slated to increase to $1 billion by 2020, and Russia and North Korea plan to carry out the future trades in rubles. Last year has been a pretty significant milestone for increased Russia-North Korea relations. In June, Russia announced it was extending its Trans-Siberian Railway all the way into North Korea. And Russia is also considering investing in North Korea's Kaesong Industrial Park, which is a special economic zone in the country where more than 50,000 North Korean workers are employed by South Korean companies. And in May, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a law that will forgive 90% of the North Korea's Soviet-era debt. And Kim Jong-un said he will make a state visit to Moscow early in May to join Russia's celebrations for the 60th anniversary of the end of World War II. That is interesting. That kind of seems like a strange place to go and celebrate the end of World War II, and in Russia, and also a strange couple of guys there doing the celebrating. But it does look like, again, a lot of the world working their systems so that they can start trading outside of the dollar. That is what is going on. You got North Korea and Russia doing it. You've got Russia and Iran starting to do it. Obviously, Russia and China working hard. They've got the new SWIFT payment program set up, and it just got kicked off in Russia yesterday at 5 different banks. I mean, they are moving fast and furious away from the hegemony of the U.S. dollar. And I think that is something that everybody needs to just bear in mind. Again, carrot bars, ladies and gentlemen, probably something you want to look into. Get yourself some precious metal, get it in your house, take physical delivery. Smart way to play the game at this point, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, moving on to some national news, right? Meow. Okay, so IRS. Let's talk about the IRS for a second. They're requesting right now a $2 billion with a B, as in boy, that is a lot of money, $1 billion boost to its budget, and they would like to have 9,000 new employees as it prepares to enforce the Obamacare tax provisions. So Barack Obama released his $4 trillion budget proposal for fiscal year 2016 earlier this week, and it included $13.9 billion for the Internal Revenue Service. The agency asked Congress for close to $2 billion more for operations than last year, which is a 16% increase. So we are increasing the IRS's budget. Let's bear in mind as well that the IRS is a private corporation, right? They have no bearing. They have no interest in our government whatsoever. They are quite literally just the bill collecting side of the Federal Reserve, also a private corporation. So why is it exactly that our taxpayer dollars are being pilfered by them, first of all, and we're also paying for them to pilfer us? We're giving them more money just to be pilfered. And I don't know about you guys. I am so sick and tired of being pilfered. I don't even know how to deal with it. But they are now also asking for an 11% increase in employee totals. So they're going to increase their employee totals by 11%. So we can obviously then say, well, unemployment numbers have gone down because you're going to increase this. That's going to be about 9,200 more full-time jobs at the IRS. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay. We got to go to a 3-minute break, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we got lots more news to cover. Stan Bale will be here in about a half an hour. Cannot tell you guys how appreciative I am of you guys being here. We'll see you in a few minutes, guys. Keep on keeping on. We'll see you in the chat room too. Bye.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Enemy Within Radio with Tom Barnes and Tommy Whitgate. Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you again, all you guys in the chat room. Love seeing you guys in there. We were talking about the new bolstering of the IRS budget by a couple of billion dollars and also the bolstering of their employees that they have there. Bearing in mind, just want to let everybody know, again, these guys are agents of a corporation and they don't have any bearing on your life whatsoever. They are completely illegal, unlawful. And what I would do if some – anyway, I'm going to get away from that because I'm not going to talk to these people about what to do about the IRS. But again, they don't have any authority over you unless you decide to give it to them. If you decide to become a citizen or give up your rights to have privileges, then you know, I wish you the best of luck out there. But that would not be an angle on life that I would take. So anyway, the IRS is going to bolster a whole bunch of numbers, which will obviously probably be touted as a as an improvement on the economy, because think about all these new jobs we just created. Created with Obamacare. It's just, oh man, the mental hoops you have to jump through is just crazy around here. Anyway, moving on, another good story about the United States here. The U.S. is going to begin destroying its largest remaining stockpile of chemical-laden artillery shells. This is marking a milestone in the global campaign to eradicate a debilitating weapon that still creeps into modern war. The Pueblo Chemical Depot in Southern Colorado plans to start neutralizing 2,600 tons of aging mustard gas agent in March, and this is the U.S. moving towards complying with a 1997 treaty banning all chemical weapons. They also talk a little bit about chemical weapons in this article, citing the chlorine attack in Syria, which, again, a lot of people don't necessarily believe that that actually happened. That was on the BBC when it went down. It does look like they used quite a bit of stock footage. But I do think it's a good thing that we're trying to get away from chemical weapons. I don't want protesters being hit by even, you know, bear spray at this point. The mace that the police use to me is a chemical weapon. And again, we're supposed to be part of this thing, this international treaty where we're not using these things. But we are, I think, one of the last four countries. Yeah, U.S., Russia, Libya, and Iraq. We're the last four countries that haven't done anything with this chemical weapons convention. So we're hopefully going to start getting on board with that. Anyway, they're going to start destroying all of these weapons. The concerns about public health and the environment and the cost of actually destroying the stuff has been what has been slowing this process down. But right now, Libya expects to be finished in 2016. Russia should be done in 2020. Iraq doesn't really have a completion date right now, and we don't really know when we're going to be done with ours. The U.S. has actually amassed more than 30,000 tons of chemical weapons, mustard agents, deadly nerve gases, all of that, most of it, at least during the Cold War. And the Army describes them as a deterrent, and the U.S. allegedly has never used them in war. But I would have to bring up the issue of depleted uranium being used in the Gulf Wars on both occasions. You know, depleted uranium is the is the equivalent of salting the earth, in my opinion. You know, it used to be that people would go in and conquer other people and then take all the goods out of their land, they would salt the earth. They would make it so that no crops would ever grow there again, or at least for quite a long time. But what we've done in Iraq and some of the other Middle East regions with this depleted uranium rounds is the equivalent of salting the earth for, you know, millennium. They will never, ever be able to live there. They won't ever be able to have kids that are healthy. It's just absolutely crazy. So the idea that, you know, the Army's saying we don't use chemical weapons while at the same time we've got depleted uranium rounds flying all over the Middle East is a little bit hypocritical in my mind. Okay, digressing, moving away. The head of the FCC, we've been talking about the net neutrality rules and things like that, but the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, as of yesterday, has officially proposed the strongest open internet protections the web has ever seen. And I have to tell you, this guy has flip-flopped quite a bit, Tom Wheeler. And it does look like now he is on the right track. So, he said, by placing broadband internet providers such as Comcast and Verizon Wireless under stricter regulatory regime, consumers would be ensured an open internet. Under the new regime, broadband providers would be explicitly banned from blocking content or from creating fast lanes for web services that can pay for preferential treatment into American homes. So that's a pretty good deal. The proposal is the latest in a year-long struggle by Wheeler, who is a former lobbyist for the cable and wireless industry, so there you can see his conflict of interest arising, his struggle to create so-called net neutrality rules amid great public interest in the creation of strong rules and fierce opposition by deep-pocketed telecom and community cable companies. Wheeler said on Wednesday that he wants to regulate internet providers with the most aggressive tool at his disposal, which is Title II of the Communications Act. In addition to covering fixed broadband providers such as Comcast and Time Warner Cable, the draft rules would also cover wireless providers such as T-Mobile and Sprint, and the rules would also make speeding up or slowing down web traffic, a tactic known as prioritization, illegal, and it would ban the blocking of web traffic outright. The proposed rules are way more aggressive than a lot of people had initially predicted. Just a few months ago, Wheeler had actually appeared ready to be sided with the cable providers. But after a lot of prodding, including protests in his home driveway and a public plea from President Obama, Wheeler said Wednesday that the industry does need, in fact, strong oversight. So the FCC is expected to vote on Wheeler's proposal on the 26th of February, so just a couple of weeks from now. The draft rules, again, seek to impose a modified version of Title II, which was originally written to regulate telephone companies. It will waive a number of provisions, including parts of the law that empower the FCC to set retail prices, which is something that the internet providers have been fearing most of all. But contrary to many people's expectations, the draft rules will also keep other parts of Title II that allow the FCC to enforce consumer privacy rules, extract funds from internet providers to help subsidize services for rural Americans, educators, and the poor, and also to make sure services such as Google Fiber can build new broadband pipes more easily, according to people familiar with the plan. So it does look like now at this point, the FCC has pulled their heads from their collective bottoms and are getting ready to actually do something productive for all of us. Will that happen? Will there be a whole bunch of back deals and things going on like that? Remains to be seen. You know, I don't really know. But it does look like at least we're moving in the right direction, and moving against the big deep pockets of all these ISPs. So that's a good thing. The United States Department of Justice has determined that it will not prosecute either News Corp or its sister company, 21st Century Fox, on charges of phone hacking and bribery of public officials, which stemmed from the 2011 scandal involving News of the World in the United Kingdom. News of the World, of course, owned by Mr. Murdoch there as one of his three. Well, he actually sold it back in 2011 in the midst of all of this whole hacking crisis. So essentially, these news organizations, News Corp, Fox, and News of the World in the UK, were hacking into people's private information, and they were doing it to break stories, essentially. And then they got caught, and it kind of made a big deal. But I guess Rupert Murdoch has enough money that the United States Justice Department doesn't seem to want to prosecute against him for doing what he did. So there you go. That's what's going on there. And the House voted to repeal Obamacare and is now pressing for alternative legislation. So the U.S. House of Representatives voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act by approving a bill that would dismantle the current law and move forward to provide an alternative plan. Yay on this bill. House Resolution 596, introduced into the House on January 28th and passed 239 to 186 on Tuesday. There is no support from House Democrats, surprise, surprise, and three Republicans voted in opposition of the bill, but CNN reported that GOP leaders believe that the passage of 596 is the beginning of their effort to show that they have a better plan, although no alternative has been provided as of yet. So right now, essentially the Republicans are saying we're going to defund or we're going to take apart the Obamacare, but the bill right now is going to delay that repeal for 6 months if it passes. Of course, it's still got to get through the Senate, and then Barack Obama obviously is going to try and veto it. So whether or not it gets enough vote to get around the veto, probably won't happen. But anyway, the bill as it stands right now would actually delay the repeal for 6 months, would give the Republicans an opportunity to actually come up with an alternative package, which is something that they are they're wanting to do. And as a side note, Ted Cruz actually introduced a separate bill on Monday to repeal the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and the Healthcare and Education Reconciliation Act of 2010 entirely. So that's a separate bill that Mr. Cruz is working towards there. I don't trust I don't trust Mr. Cruz. And I don't trust Mr. Cruz because his wife is Heidi, and I realize that not everyone in the world is evil, but when you're that high up at Goldman Sachs, you're evil. I don't care who you are, you're evil. She's like head of the Southwest region. She's got a bajillion, you know, dollars worth of derivatives under her wing there. So let's see. Do we want to do some awful police officer stories? What do you guys think? Let's not do that one. We'll skip the awful police officer story. We'll just say there's a cop someplace that did something bad and he's out of a job now, which is a good thing. Hang on 1 second. Okay. Sorry, doing a little chatting there, guys. And then kind of a goofy story. A Louisiana teacher is out of a job this week also because she allegedly kicked and slapped one of her first grade students. She's been a school teacher at this institution, this school, for about 10 years. But it essentially caught on video. She was really being mean to a kid, slapped him, took one of his tacos, told him he only needed one of his tacos. Anyway, she's got a record of going around the lunchroom and taking food from kids. And anyway, she's out of a job now because she hit this kid and stole his taco. So if that's the kind of teacher you've got teaching your kid right now, I'll tell you what, if I had kids and there was a teacher and you mess with one of my kids, poof, you better hope that the worst thing that happens to you is that you lose your job. I mean, seriously, because ain't gonna go down like that. Anyway, moving on here. Let's talk about some let's get into economics, because there's lots happening as usual. Let's see what the Dow is doing right now. It is up quite a bit, 160 points up. Happy days are here again, ladies and gentlemen. Dollar index dropping just a touch today to 93.99. And let's move on to some commodities, see where gold is at. Gold's taken a little bit of a spill since its high at 1310. We're down at 1261 right now. Which is down just a little bit in early trading still. $17, still kind of your target for silver at this point. Bitcoin down just a little bit, still above that $200 mark at $214.77. And the euro to dollar rate is at 1.14 right now. So the euro kind of hanging in there a little bit. So that's what's going on in the live economy right now. Bad, 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 bad news for Radio Shack yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. It got as close as it could possibly get to being insolvent and out of business yesterday. They actually suspended trading on the New York Stock Exchange yesterday because essentially they didn't have enough money. They don't have enough market value to be listed on the exchange anymore. The minimum required is $50 million, and right now they do not have it, ladies and gentlemen. And the New York Stock Exchange said that Radio Shack does not intend to submit a business plan to exchange to address how it could raise its market value. So essentially, Radio Shack down 90% of their value in the last 12 months. The retailer's been so low on cash that they were trying to shut down 1,100 stores at the end of last year, and they could only afford to shut down about 110 of them right now. Right now, they have managed to burn through all but about $43 million of its cash. And even counting its credit lines, the company right now has only got about $63 million available. So, again, Radio Shack going down the tubes in real time right now, ladies and gentlemen. Again, they suspended trading on NASDAQ yesterday. So, might be some, clearance sales, liquidation sales going on at your local neighborhood Radio Shack coming up in the future. Who knows? I don't know, but doesn't look good for them right now. Anyway, the world's super rich own $3 trillion worth of owner-occupied residential properties, according to, which is more than the gross domestic product of the UK, France, and India. Right now on the planet, I didn't know this, there are 211,000 ultra-high net worth individuals. These are defined by people, with more than 30 million in assets and above around the world. Nearly 80% of them own two or more residences that they bought for their own personal use rather than purely for an investment. And the total value of these homes rose by 8% in 2014, according to a report released Wednesday by a private wealth consultancy, WealthX, and Sotheby's International Realty, citing 1,000 publicly available sources and databases. So these ultra-high net worth individuals keep their primary residences for an average of about 15 years and their secondary residences for about 10 years, while billionaires seem to change their properties about once every 3 years. But why is this significant? Because there are so many countries in turmoil right now economically. If you're in Russia, what do you want to do with your money? Well, you want to buy a house in London, don't you? You want to get some actual real estate. And a lot of these people who are super high wealthy or high net worth individuals put a lot of their money, about 30% of their money is held in real estate. And I didn't know that. I just thought that was fairly interesting. But $3 trillion worth of homes is now what the super rich own. So that is interesting to me because that is the safe haven buying for the ultra high, you know, net worth individuals. It's not like you're going to go out and buy an ounce of gold when you get some money. These are the kind of people who are going to go out and buy, you know, a 400,000 square foot house and then just sit on it. And it's just interesting to see what people are going towards, in terms of safe haven buying these years, especially internationally. A lot of Chinese coming here to buy properties and things like that. But interesting stuff. Also, Staples right now and Office Depot announced the companies had entered into a definitive agreement in which Staples will acquire all of the outstanding shares of Office Depot. So you're again seeing more merges. Does look like Office Depot will be going away and be absorbed completely by Staples. When that deal will actually finish, nobody really knows. But right now, that deal has an equity value of about $6.3 billion. So we'll see what happens with that as well. Let's see what else is going on. The U.S. authorities stepping up the investigation against Moody's right now for issuing favorable ratings on mortgage bonds to win business before the 2008 global financial crisis. This is a story that just kind of keeps coming up and 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 again. And that's like Moody's or Fitch or Standard & Poor. All these people are under the gun right now because essentially they lied to so many people and they said, you know, it's a big difference between when you say something is AAA rated to being junk. That's not like a, there's a pretty big spectrum there. So the idea that these people were, oh, we kind of made some mistakes and we overvalued some of this stuff. No, that's not what happened at all. They lied and they tried to make a whole bunch of money off of it. So anyway, the investigation now turning its attention towards Moody's after S&P has just agreed to a $1.4 billion settlement. So U.S. Justice Department officials have met a number of former executives at the New York-based ratings firm in recent months to clarify the mechanism of issuing ratings on mortgage deals. However, it's pretty unclear whether the investigation will result in a lawsuit or not. But again, Moody's under the gun there. And J.P. Morgan also agreed to pay $500 million to end more than 6 years of class action litigation over Bear Stearns' sale of $17.58 billion worth of mortgage securities that proved to be defective during the U.S. housing and financial crisis. So again, J.P. Morgan now, $500 million going to be paid. But again, where does all this money go? Where does it come from? These people, these banks didn't make this money. This money is made out of nothing. And so now they're going to, you know, we essentially bailed these banks out. We gave them all our taxpayer money. Now we're all on the hook for that. And now, J.P. Morgan's going to end up paying $500 million. You know, back to somebody else. We're not going to see any of that money. Just silly stuff going on. But anyway, mortgage crisis, still fallout from the mortgage crisis going on right now all around the world. Let's move on to some science and tech stuff here right now. And we got a little bit of health stuff I want to get to as well. Science and tech stuff right now. Uber, the car, what is it, like a taxi service, Uber? Is that what it is? I don't even know. But they're working right now on self-driving cars, which is kind of unusual because someday that Uber car pulling up to your curbside may not even have a driver in it. And the ride-sharing service announced that it's working right now with Carnegie Mellon University to develop self-driving automobiles. And as part of the deal with CMU, the Uber Advanced Technology Center will be created in Pittsburgh. The company says it will focus on the development of long-term technologies that advance Uber's mission of bringing safe, reliable transportation to everyone, everywhere. And according to Uber, research areas will involve technologies dealing with mapping, vehicle safety, and autonomous driving technology. So kind of interesting. If you're thinking about maybe jumping into an investment, Uber might be one of those companies that you want to look at. It's kind of unusual too, because Google, they've been working on the self-driving automobile for such a long time, but right now Google is working on its own ride-sharing app. So it's like they're kind of working together, but differently, and we're going to see who gets to who first, essentially, is what's going to happen. I think Google will probably end up winning because they've got the most money. Remains to be seen right now. So anyway, probably not going to be developing this technology right now. You're probably not going to be able to get a robotic limo ride here anytime soon, but Google and Uber both working towards self-driving cars and ride-sharing applications. So we'll see the hybrid of that probably happening here pretty soon. Somebody in the chat room is asking me to discuss the CEO from Gallup surveys calling the government's unemployment of 5.6. We talked about that just a little bit yesterday. Again, a lot of that unemployment number stuff is stuff that we all know out here. You know, the government knocks people off the list after they have looking for a year. It also doesn't take into account people who are underemployed, people who may only have like a 30-hour-a-week job but would like to be fully employed. So again, the numbers are important to understand. Obviously, you know, the official unemployment rate of 5.6% is completely ludicrous. But what the most important aspect of that story is that it's not some conspiratorial guy out there or some obscure, you know, economics quote unquote expert telling you that these numbers are inaccurate. It's the CEO of Gallup. I mean, that is a pretty, I know somebody who works for Gallup and I know how hard those people work there. And we're talking about, they don't just come out and say stuff. They pretty much back up everything they say. That's kind of the whole name of the game there. But when the CEO of Gallup comes out and says, yeah, this whole 5.6% unemployment rate has not been the case forever. And, it's crazy. Has the government been called on the carpet to answer? No, of course not. We have no government, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want to overstate that. We have a corporation that's pretending to be a government. We don't have a government. There's nobody in government left to hold anybody accountable because every member of the government is a corporation. Every aspect, every agency, every part of it is a for-profit, hell-bent corporation. That's all there is to it. So, if they come out and lie to us about unemployment, does it matter? It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter what the numbers are if you're behind the curtain. It doesn't make any difference because it's all fake. Everything is fake. I tried to talk to my friend about this yesterday. We were trying to figure out what in the world is real anymore. What's real? Okay, if you think about it, education, fake, right? Entertainment, pretty much fake. Music industry, fake. Politics, definitely, you could probably liken that to entertainment, but also fake. The money is fake. The medical system is fake. The food's all fake. The water, the air, the weather, fake, right? most of your mainstream religions, probably not all that accurate. I don't want to call them fake, but there's certainly, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I don't need to go to a building to pay tithings to some guy who tells me that I can only get to heaven through him. So I don't really believe in any of that as well. So what exactly is left that's real, ladies and gentlemen? What is real? Because I don't know anymore. I know I'm real. I'm sitting here, you know, using my brain talking to you guys, and I know that this is real, or at least giving you the best that I can give you. But I'll tell you, man, yep. Robert, you hit the nail on the head, brother. It is all a matrix. And that's why we went with redpillreports.com, guys. It sounds cliche, but every single aspect of this society is part of this onion, this multi-layered onion of control and deception. And that's what we do here at this show, is we try and break all of those individual components down. I don't know, Silence, if I am real or not. I feel like sometimes I'm not, but I like to hope that I am. Anyway, we're all doing the best that we can. We're all trying to figure out what is actually going on. And I'll tell you what, I think Stan Dale will probably have some insight into this as well. So we'll definitely be looking forward to talking to him in about a half an hour. Eric says, I'm a battery. I agree with that. And that's exactly the right answer, Eric. People don't understand that. We don't have a fiat currency, ladies and gentlemen. There's no such thing as a fiat currency left on the planet. They tell you that our currency has no value, but that's not true. The value, ladies and gentlemen, is you. Your time, talent, and energy are the only thing of value on this planet. You are a battery, Eric. That is exactly what is going on. They monetized your existence through your birth certificate and through the Social Security Administration and through all of these contracts that you consent to without your knowledge. Why do you think they want to bring in 13 million new people to the country? Because that's 13 million new birth certificates that they can issue bonds against, and that's what floats our currency. We are chattel. We are a tax farm. That is all we are. And these people that are running the show, and I'm using that term people pretty loosely here, they own us. They own us, and they think that we belong to them. They believe that your labor, your future, time, talent, and energy is their property, and that is what they have leveraged to build the country, ladies and gentlemen. So if you don't understand the metaphor of the Matrix telling you that you are a battery, then you don't understand where creativity, where things come from. I can take a pile of money, and I can throw it on the floor all day long, but you know what it's not going to make? It's not going to make a table. Right? I have to actually get involved. I have to use my brain to make things happen. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the value. That is what is going on. So yes, we are a battery. You have been monetized. Your future labor, time, and talent and energy, does not belong to you anymore until you withdraw your consent and take it back. And we've talked to a lot of people about how to do that. The first thing I'd recommend, get yourself a Black's Law dictionary and start studying contract law, because once you understand that everything is contract, then you can understand how all of the laws work. Everything is contract law. There's no other arena that you need to focus in, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, just flat out, that's what I know to be the case. Okay, probably enough of a of a ramble there. Hey, here's some interesting news. I thought this was cool, and this is from the health stuff now, but research now has demonstrated that meditation actually builds brain cells and increases gray matter in the brain. Isn't that interesting? This is crazy. We don't want to say sovereign citizen movement. I'm sorry, I'm jumping back to the chat room here, but sovereign is a word and citizen is a word. They're actually mutually exclusive. It's physically impossible to be a sovereign citizen. When you are a citizen, you are somebody that has privileges granted to you by whatever you're a citizen of. I'm not a citizen. I don't live in the United States. I live on the United States because, again, the United States is a corporation. I don't understand how you can live inside of a corporation. So I'm not a citizen. I'm not a resident. I'm not an American. I'm not an uncle. I'm not a Pisces. I'm not any of those things. Those are just words that people have made up. But the sovereign citizen movement is a word that the FBI is going to hop on and really drag you down. But again, mutually exclusive. You can't be sovereign and a citizen. So anyway, please go to redpillreports.com and check out this meditation article. Apparently meditation is way better for you than you could possibly imagine. And it's being backed up by research from Harvard that meditation actually changes the structure of your brain. Makes a lot of good things happen for you there. Lots of other health news I couldn't get to because I got off on a ramble. And I apologize about that, but we'll make it up here in the next segment because Stan Deo is going to be joining us. So stay right here, guys. 3 minute break. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy? And ecstasy? Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The Wicked Ones obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I do not have to overstate how excited I am today to be joined by, once again, the one and only Stan Deo. Man, I'll tell you, if you guys don't know Stan Deo, you guys have been living under a rock on Pluto for the last 20 years. But okay, here's what I would like all of you guys to do. First and foremost, go to standeo.com, which is his website. And then on the sidebar there on the right, there's going to be a section called Show Images. And I imagine that today, during the course of our discussion, he will probably refer to some of those images. So you might as well just have them up on your screen so you know what we're talking about. It'd be a great place to go. And for those of you guys who don't know who Stan Deo is, please allow me to introduce him here a little bit. But he has held above top secret security clearance. He's worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. Yes, I'm absolutely serious. He's also a computer programmer of mainframes in 7 different languages, including PC and Macintosh. He's a senior systems analyst. He's a research physicist, a marine architect, an advanced propulsion engineer for marine, air, and spacecraft, author of 3 different books, 6 scientific papers. He's an amateur archaeologist in the Middle East, which is one of my very favorite topics in the world. He's also a TV documentary television host for several shows on Tesla and a series of 3 very highly rated shows on Channel 9 in Perth about ufology. He's a university lecturer in 3D computer animation and graphic art. He's also a biblical student and a public lecturer on world events, including the coming global economic collapse, developing solar-related crises in the Earth's climate, the UFO deception and its real intent, which we will talk about today, the suppression of badly needed technologies, which I hope we'll also talk about today, the coming destruction of America by civil war, followed by a potential foreign invasion, and is also high-voltage physics and cheaper energy. I'll tell you what, Stan, your background is intimidating, my friend, absolutely intimidating. Thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today, sir.
Thank you for inviting me, JD. It's a pleasure to be back and talking with you. Oh. I think your PR over here may be colder. We're only about 40 degrees at the moment, but before the show, you were telling me you were a bit chilly over there. What does chilly mean?
Well, chilly, we had our first official icing last night. Usually in Missouri, we get a couple of good ice storms every year, but last night was really unusual. It almost looked like little tiny pinhead-sized frozen ball bearings that were falling from the sky, and they covered everything, and I mean, it just got super slick. Everything's frozen, so I don't know if we're above freezing yet here or not, but 41 degrees sounds pretty nice to me right now, sir. To be perfectly honest.
Alrighty.
Okay, so before we get into any of these major topics that you have covered, I think the question that I'd like to ask you, Stan, since I don't get to talk to you as often as I would like, just given all of your background, all of the things that you have been involved with, all the projects and kind of neat stuff that you've been doing in your career, I have to ask, what's been your absolute favorite, or what project have you worked on or been involved with research-wise that has had the most profound effect on you, if you wouldn't mind?
Boy, that's a hard one to figure. I guess type of advanced propulsion I've worked on, I've developed and worked on, that is pretty high up there, which you know, includes gravity and plasma dynamic propulsion and submarines and you know, faster surface boats and cars and airplanes.
Right.
And then second to that, maybe researching Dr. T. Henry Murray's atmospheric electricity converter as an alternate energy source.
And you say an atmospheric electricity converter?
Yeah, what basically it was he had about an 85-foot long antenna, insulated wire, and a little box full of Tesla step-down coils and a couple of other little things, which allowed him to pull between 5 and 10 kilowatts of electricity out of the upper atmosphere, but here on the surface.
Wow.
And he even tried to patent it. I went to Washington to the patent office, took a working model there. He also took affidavits from judges, sheriffs, and engineers who helped him set up the antenna and the boxes out in a remote country location. Mm-hmm. Then they locked it with padlocks after it started running. And it was lighting, I think, about a 10-kilowatt bank of lights. And it ran for 159 hours before they said, okay, we believe there's no batteries or whatever. And right. They signed the affidavit. So anyway, he went to the patent office. And they denied him a patent because he couldn't tell them where the energy came from. He described it, its behavior and everything else. Wouldn't let him have the patent. Huh. And then, of course, you know, he died a pretty much a broke guy financially and whatever. And he was despondent that no one ever helped him. But I know that what he was doing was excellent work. And I did figure out where he was getting the energy from. And so that's been, you know, another favorite of mine, researching how to do that with a minimum of technology.
Does somebody own that patent now? Now that you say you've got figured out where the energy comes from, seems like you could probably go in.
Well, you know, no one does. And I did file a very general patent on the basic circuit. And the patent office, this was back in 2005, and the patent office said to me, gee, we won't grant you a patent on this because it just can't work.
What?
And so that was my patent application, and they denied it, which means you get to appeal and to file subsequent ones.
Okay.
But before, stupid idiots, the patent office published my entire patent application online. It's still there today.
What?
You bet. And so what was the point? I mean, they gave it away. Which, you know, it doesn't hurt. I mean, I hope someone else picked up what I'd said there and ran with it.
Right.
But, it stopped me from doing any further patent applications on propulsion systems, which I was already drafting at the time. Still have it here on my computer, but.
Wow.
You know, anyway, those are kind of things that stick out, in my mind. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a good enough answer for me, my friend. I'm curious a little bit, and I know some people in the chat room are curious about, you know, these advanced propulsion systems. We've been hearing a little bit coming out of the science community recently about dark matter and dark energy. Are those concepts related in any way, Stan, or do you have any experience with dark energy or dark matter?
Well, they're calling it dark matter or, you know, dark energy. Probably like what Professor Dirac called, you know, the Dirac sea of energy, or ether space, according to Maxwell, Jim Kirk Maxwell. But fluid, you know, space is a fluid, and time is not a dimension, it's a ratio. It's just a unitless, really, ratio, unless you want to assign, you know, units to it, like hours, seconds, or minutes, or whatever.
Right.
It's a ratio of distances. The distances between object or that an object is here and where it is when another object has moved from where it is to another place. It's the ratio of those distances. And mathematically, you can prove this. But anyway, real dimensions, you know, X, Y, and Z in space, tell us that space behaves like a fluid. And in, I want to say 55 or 56 at Chapel Hill in North Carolina, a meeting of the world's leading physicists put a 40% probability that the best way to model the universe and space, hence, is using hydrodynamic equations or fluid equations, which are admitted more difficult to deal with than, you know, matrix algebra and stuff like Einstein used. So, said that, if space is a fluid, then it will behave like a fluid of sorts, and you should be able to exceed the wave velocity, which is electromagnetic radiation like light. You can exceed that velocity if you shape your propulsion field in a particular manner. And so that's, you know, that's how I look at dark matter. Dark energy is through which we travel at high speeds, or can travel at high speeds, between star systems and galaxies.
So is all of space then made up of that dark matter, or is there, is that, I'm trying to get the fluid metaphor.
I would say yes. I would say that all that we know of in this existence, which I think is a virtual reality anyway,
mm-hmm.
of our universe is permeated, is filled with this fluid. And there are different concentrations of the fluid in various parts. Now, when you spin that fluid in very, very rapid spin, say 50 to 100 million times a second, and then you spin those atoms at a slower rate, you can form a planet, and even slower, you know, like a galaxy,
mm-hmm.
Or a solar system in a galaxy. So all the things that we see as matter are nothing more than spin around, you know, an axis at different points in the space. So that nothing is really, what is solid is simply a high-speed spinning wave, if you wish, in
right.
space. And to give you an example, in the pub, if you're in there and somebody's smoking a cigarette or a cigar and blowing smoke rings, if they, say 50, 60 miles an hour, which you can do with a Coke bottle and a couple of things,
okay.
you'll see that smoke ring travel as a unit, and it's nothing more than just smoke curling, but that if it hits something, it will bounce off of it like a particle.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, because it is spinning, it has a wave characteristic, and this is what physicists call a wavicle, or a particle of mass exhibits, or electromagnetic radiation exhibits mass-like characteristics because it will bounce, wave characteristics because it has frequency. That's why they call it a wavicle, wave and particle combined.
Okay.
Just like that smoke ring.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm curious then about, since the characteristics of space are so much different, obviously the propulsion system would have to be quite a bit different to operate in space than what we see here, you know, in terms of like an airplane sucking air in and blowing it out at high speed. But, I wonder if, without getting into too much technical stuff to lose anybody, if we could just talk about the difference between what we see here as our typical transportation engines versus what would have to happen for a provable, you know, space propulsion type system. What are the differences, and what are we at a place right now where we have that technology and it's been proven to work, or where are we at with all that?
Well, you do know that a NASA employee has designed a warp drive for a spacecraft,
mm-hmm.
and models have been made of it. In fact, if you go to my show images page and go for five rows down the middle, NASA's new warp drive, and you click on that, and it'll take you over to some pictures of the model they've built.
Right.
And this is very similar, very, very similar to what I've been proposing, what I proposed for flying saucer propulsion using the smoke ring curl effect. Now, to do this, you'll see those two rings like donuts.
Yeah.
Of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those rings will shoot particles ahead of the craft and the direction it wants to go at such speed that they will bounce back from the fluid of space and curl around to the back and form an envelope around the entire ship.
Wow.
Now, that envelope is what the ship flies inside of. Today, in fact, for the last 20 years, the Russians have had what's called the Skvall, S-K-V-A-A-L, torpedo. And they launched that at a couple hundred miles an hour from a submarine. And out the front of it, there's this little cross-looking shape on an iron rod that causes the rise and form an envelope around the torpedo. And they steer it with a little wire hook to the back inside of that steam bubble. And they can exceed, you know, the normal limitation speeds of traveling in water because they're inside of a capsule of less dense, you know, water, steam.
Right, okay.
Now, that's the same concept in faster-than-light drives. You can put it in, put this capsule around it, and it can go faster than the light speed velocity. The trick is going to be using a propulsion system that recirculates your drag energy from the pulses you put out into the environment around you in space so that the faster you go, the faster you can go. It's like a ramjet accelerator. And that means then inside that bubble, you will travel at extremely high speeds, you know, many times the speed of light. And so the warp drive, the name is really quite apropos. And Gene Roddenberry was way ahead of his time to even suggest that in the Star Trek series.
Right. What about the conditions inside of that bubble if you are a traveler? I mean, are you going to notice anything different? Is it going to be crazy amounts of G's or would there be less gravity? I mean, what would the effects of a living entity be in that bubble?
Well, since that kind of a field propulsion would require that every particle inside the bubble would be part of the propulsion field, like in other words, electric inertia would go through every atom of the crew and every atom of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
When opening, it will alter the passage of time for the crew.
Right.
It will light that they get through the bubble of the stars and everything around them. And depending upon which stars are, you know, sideways to them or located out to the side of the path of travel, there may be some rainbow effects in the stars, various ones that are moving at different velocities relative to the craft.
Mm-hmm.
So, craft, if it goes to change direction, as it does here, as flying saucers do using anti-gravity, since every molecule of the crew and the craft are in the propulsion field, when that propulsion field changes its orientation, it will simultaneously, but so quick it won't cause structural fatigue, it will change the inertial pressures on the crew, their atoms, and the ship uniformly.
Mm-hmm.
But as they do that, as they change direction, it is usually going to be in stop, new vector, start again type relations, which are discharge of a lot of energy in that capsule, you know, that encapsulated bubble they're in,
mm-hmm.
bright flashes of light in various frequencies as it throws off that energy, and then, you know, re-energizes and starts straight away on a new vector, a straight line. But in that turning of that corner, minutes or hours or days may pass for the crew while the energy of changing the vector from where they were going to the new vector is dissipated slowly compared to the actual change you see if you were standing outside the bubble. An outside observer would see that craft go zip to a point, zip to another point.
Right.
And at the zip turns, there would be a bright flash of light. So in real time, it would look like it was instantaneous to us. Inside the craft, looking out the bubble at us, we would go into slow motion for minutes, hours, or days while they turn that corner. In that fraction of a second, hour time, so they age, but it's like this. If you could build a spherical cage in your car, so that you had a seat, you know, your driver's seat and a steering wheel inside that iron steel ball,
mm-hmm.
and it's very strong. Let's say, so that you could run your car into a wall at 100 miles an hour. Bang! Normally, it would just destroy you, but because that steel titanium cage is so solid it won't bend, and stuff that will allow you to spin around inside that ball.
Right.
So you will hit the wall at 100 miles an hour. Your car will just crash to pieces, but the ball with you in it will, inside there, you will spin. And you will spin and spin and spin until you slow down and stop. Now, what this has done is it's amortized that sudden stop instead of being in a fraction of a second over minutes, and that way your body can take it.
Wow. And you think that's probably how the UFOs, or at least what we think of as UFOs that are doing exactly what you're describing, the zip, change direction, zip, zip, zip. Is that similar to what they're using, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think that because you know that?
Yeah.
What about, targeting? Here's a question I've got. When you're talking about this change in direction and this potential crazy top speeds, you know, moving through space, how far are we away from having computers that are capable of actually charting a course like that? Because it seems like that to me would be the constraint right now, would be making sure we don't run through a meteor field or something like that, or run into a star. Are we moving in that direction? Do you think we have the computer capability to actually target something like that in the ship type form?
You know, I don't know that we do. I think there are beings here, you know, that the Bible calls the watchers or the fallen ones or that kind of stuff, or, you know, fallen angels or whatever. They have technology thousands of years, not tens of thousands of years ahead of us. And certainly they may be able to do that, which would have required mapping, a large segment, or if not all of the universe.
Right.
With that, and then with, clever propulsion fields will help you deflect meteors up to a certain mass.
Okay.
Remember, because the field is going out ahead of the craft and spinning around behind it, coming into the intakes and recirculating, it's breaststroking at a high speed, and it shoves a shockwave way ahead of and out into space, so that unless you hit an object just straight dead on, it will be deflected around you.
Okay. Just like a boat going through the ocean, essentially.
Yes, with a bow wave way out ahead of it, it'll spin things around it.
Wow, Stan, that's so fascinating.
But don't hit a planet or a star like that, because that's too big to mess with.
Yeah, or running through an alien, an alien satellite or something, that, you know, we run into some other, this type of, interstellar society, and they've got their own, you know, cable satellites and things like that maybe we haven't mapped. It's just interesting to me to think about how, what the constraints of that technology would be and how all of that would come together.
It is. I mean, it's great conversation and mind games to think about this. Do it all the time.
Oh, it's just super fascinating. I have a question though from the chat room, and I don't want to change gears too directly here, but somebody was wondering about each individual galaxy having its own chemical construct that behaves differently than what scientists expect. Is that something that you've run across in your research, Stan? Is that something that actually is true, that each individual galaxy has its own chemical construct?
Well, I don't know that, but I have suspected that. And the reason, the spin of the galaxy and its particles relative to the region of space it's in, it will change the table of elements, because they're all derived from the relative spin rate of their host system, which is a galaxy in that case, and then to the stars. And I've often wondered if the rules, quote-unquote rules of physics and chemistry, would not change in another galactic region, or perhaps even in another stellar system. It's an interesting problem.
Wow. Okay. And then another quick question from the chat room. We've got about 4 minutes before the break, so I'm just kind of doing some peppering here. But somebody was wondering about the Phoenix Lights. You remember the big Phoenix Lights fiasco?
Sure.
Was that our technology, or do you think that was something else?
You know, I don't know. But could we have developed that kind of technology? Yes. I know that in the late 70s, we started losing control, mankind did, of the bases we shared with the fallen ones.
Right.
And after that time, it's anybody's guess when we lost control of the skies, because the technology of the fallen ones was so much greater than ours, and they'd used our infrastructure we'd helped them set up in these underground, undersea bases.
Right.
That they could oversee with technology that we weren't aware of. And like the Phoenix Lights, here's how you could do something like this. If you take a 30-foot diameter flying saucer, and you say, well, that's got a little anti-gravity, you know, set of coils in it, and it works fine. Okay, suppose you took 100 of those and you arranged them in proximity so that they all link together, the fields all link together. Mm-hmm. You have 100 different little anti-gravity fields as nodes. And then over them, you construct a shell that looks like a big ship. Then you could use those little ships together under one control to fly the Trojan horse, if you wish, right, using those little ships underneath as the field propulsion. Now, if you remember the Stevensville account, that guy that stood in the forest or in the woods there and looked up, he drew a picture of the underside, all size or bigger craft that came over, and he could see dimples in the underside. To me, that probably indicates nodes, gravitational nodes, mm-hmm, that were linked together inside that structure to make the whole big thing fly. So could we do that with the Phoenix Light type devices? Theoretically, yes.
No. Wow. Wow. I'm kind of just overwhelmed right now because, A, you know, we're going to have Richard Sauter on the show tomorrow, and we're talking about the underground bases and some of the connections. But, you know, the idea that we have kind of teamed up with, or at least some of the powers that shouldn't be, kind of teamed up with the Watchers or the Fallen Angels to start trading, you know, DNA sequencing availability for some of this technology. Is that kind of what you feel like we're at right now?
Yeah. And back to the big craft type thing. Mm-hmm. The engineers and physicists have said you can't possibly make a craft that big because the sheer weight porting steel frames over a mile would cause it to bend and break and fall apart.
Okay.
But I stress to them, if you have, you know, 100, let's say, 30-foot diameter, the most stress that these steel members and support frames would have would be within that 30-foot radius, or actually it's about 800-foot radius of the field. So they would not be exposed to gravitational distortion because they would all be exposed to short around those nodes. And, you know, unless you can factor into these physicists and engineers' minds and make local gravitational fields to reduce the stress along members of the structure, unless you can introduce that to the mind, they will not be able to understand or grasp this.
Wow. Very interesting. I definitely want to come back. We've got to go to a break here in just a few seconds,
right,
Stan, and I want to come back, and I'd like to talk about the difference between the space propulsion system and the anti-gravity stuff right now, because obviously those are two different physics problems that they've had to solve, and I know you were very involved with the anti-gravity thing. And, man, I just tell you, Stan, I cannot thank you enough for coming onto the program. A lot of people in the chat room, a lot of questions.
All right.
We're going to go to this break, and we'll come back, and we'll try and get to all of them. Stan Deo is our guest. StanDeo.com is where you need to be. Check out the show images, and we'll come back and pick it up from there. 3-minute break, guys. We'll be right back.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear. Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at HempUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you have the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye, Tuesday through Friday,
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you guys who are laying out so many good questions in the chat room right now. Stan, I got to tell you, you are a very popular young man. I have to tell you, Professor Deo, here's my question for you right now. I was going to ask you about the difference between the space propulsion and the anti-gravity stuff, but I'm getting a lot of other questions from the chat room that I think are really interesting. And one of them, somebody wants to know about, have you seen a movie called Contact with, I don't remember the lady's name, but it was about the large Stargate machine that was built. Did you ever see that movie?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Got it in our library.
Yeah, with Jodie Foster. Is that at all accurate? Is that something, that technology, is that something that we've actually toyed around with in your impression, sir?
Don't know that we have. I think that the good Lord did and does, and the fallen ones, the Watchers, did to gate into our reality.
Mm.
In the movie Contact, Jodie Foster says that she, you know, that capsule she was in, it seemed to have gone way deep into the universe and then back.
Right.
But it didn't seem to move, you know, to the observers outside of the ball that drops her, that spinning hoop business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she described it as saying, well, it must be an Einstein-Rosen bridge, you know, the wormhole through space.
Yep.
Now, mathematically, that's kind of a mathematical term, and in reality, it's a bit absurd. But basically, what the Einstein-Rosen described was gating through a portal between our universe and parallel universes, or actually concentric universes around us and perhaps beneath us,
mm-hmm.
in energy density. Now, using that concept, I think that in the time of Nimrod, who built the Tower of Babel, and before that the quote-unquote little g gods, the super beings, came to Earth through a portal on the top of a high mountain or an artificial pyramid, a tower with a receiver port on top. Reason being that because they were gating into our universe from a concentric one whose energy on the average atom in that universe was so great that when they came through, their bodies were like flame to the environment around them as the energy of their molecules was adjusting.
Okay.
Of our world.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Moses, when he spent 40 days up there with God on Mount Sinai, when he came back for weeks, he glowed, his skin glowed, his arms glowed, you know, and people were afraid of him because he was like a god to them for a short
right? Wow.
Energized, you know, to our level. But anyway, parallel concentric universes would these portals, I mean, even on the stela of Marduk at around 635 BC, it shows a planned view of the top of the ziggurat, which we think was the tower that, the design for Nimrod's Tower of Babel. That showed an area at the top where beings could, the gods could alight, de-energizing as they step down the various levels of the step pyramid. Hmm. Anyway, this gets back to the misconception of people about Einstein's limit velocity in space is the speed of light. That's the limit measurable velocity to an observer watching a light beam, you know, fluid of space. But that is just a wave. And it's like your boat, your bow of your boat going through the water. If you get a speed boat really humping along in the water, you will see that way ahead of the boat, shock waves form that curl back into the oncoming bow and start to add resistance on the square. In fact, probably even on the cube as you move through the water. And, so the faster you go, the more energy reflects back at you from your own pushing. Mm-hmm. Through the water or through space. So that's why when you develop a field, that's why that, just a second, let me put that phone on.
No problem. We all know how popular you are.
okay, there we go. Sorry.
No problem.
That's why in space, when you're wanting to go faster than the speed of light, you have to pulse the field ahead of you, not straight ahead, but at angles so that the reflected curl that would normally come back and press on the front of your craft will spin around and behind. Instead of shoving your way through space, you are creating a hole for you to fall into
right.
continuously. And that way you can exceed the light wave limit, speed limit by, deflecting the inertia of your moving through space. I know that's probably hard to do without seeing my arms wave and everything. I tried anyway.
Hey, I can picture it from here. Okay, well, that seems like a pretty concise answer, though. I'm going to just jump back into some chat room questions, if you don't mind. Somebody's asking about a gentleman named John Searle and his flying discs and generator. Are you familiar with him, and is there any truth to his claims?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
Because I do know about John Searle's work and mm-hmm. The reports of it, and I think perhaps what he managed to do was to generate a localized gravitic field in that those disks, mm-hmm. which behaved rather strangely because he didn't have control of them; it just went straight up. But
be scary.
well, yeah, it can make a hole in your ceiling, but.
So how does that relate to your anti-gravity propulsion studies then?
I think from what I could determine from what descriptions you just out there in the public domain about his designs that it was very similar. The vectors were not quite the same directions, but the concepts for generating a field around the craft are about the same as you know, what I would say we use in our 30-foot diameter craft.
Okay, okay. We're going shotgun pattern here again. What about these Hadron colliders? What in the world are they really up to, in your opinion, sir?
Oh, the Hadron. It's
the Hadron colliders, yes, sir.
Yeah, collider. Well, basically, they are trying to collide two particles at such a speed that they exceed the speed of light and create a wormhole. Now then, people say, oh no, a wormhole will suck up the Earth, but it won't.
It won't, okay.
Now, we're talking about what's called a micro wormhole, and without getting too detailed on it, a black hole can form at that level, but it needs a certain amount of energy around it at a certain distance before it can grow. And so what happens to these micro black holes is they exist for a fraction of a second and then they dissolve.
Okay.
They burst like a bubble. And they've been studying that to try to figure out the origin of the universe and the Big Bang. Now, not being privy to the various projects and the descriptions of them, as probably very few people are outside the organization,
right.
I don't know what else they were doing. It must be something awfully important to spend that many years, that much money, and that much energy to see what happens. And I suspect that they are looking for, you know, a portal between the universes. I can't think of another reason other than that. And also to probably try to get an answer to a real unified field equation for the universe, because the existing ones, even I alone, all have flaws. When you try to explain certain events that we see in the heavens mathematically within those models, or when you translate it back out to real world 3D physics, it doesn't translate, or it makes absurd answers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for answers. And I'll tell you one thing they're going to have to do to get an accurate model of, say, the Big Bang and the universe that followed, is they have to realize that the speed of light, or speed of electromagnetic radiation, full stop, is dependent upon the density of space itself. And in the Big Bang, everything was down in a very tiny little space, and the density was over 100 million times what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, the speed of waves was much, much faster. I mean, sound, for instance, in the air might travel at 1,100 feet per second. In solid bar of nickel, sound travels maybe 5,500 feet per second.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
The more dense, the faster the wave travels.
Okay.
So, now if light and electromagnetic radiation and hence radioactive decay, if all these things are subject to space, then a 20 billion year old universe might only be 50,000 years.
Right. Wow.
You see?
Yeah, I do see. Mm-hmm.
We measure things on the assumed velocity of light now, which is so slow, just immediately after that, that it distorts our calculations hugely. Hmm. And when they factor that in, they're going to get some answers that may surprise them.
Well, let's just say, hypothetically, Professor Deo, that you were in charge of the Hadron Collider. What kind of information would you want to be trying to get from it? Or what would you be doing with the information that you think they might be garnishing from it?
Well, it's a brute force method. I would probably suggest that they try to generate the effects by what's called harmonic interfaces, where you pump energy into a system harmonically instead of just racing particles around that long loop and accelerating, and then colliding them together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's applied propulsion, but I would accelerate particles or energy smaller area and watch their behavior by pumping energy into them and expanding the radius of the energy of an atom or a subatomic particle to make gateways. Oh, I'm positive that we have hyperspace, which is, you know, a level or levels above our, and hypo, or subspace, as Star Trek calls it, but hypo space,
wow,
which has lower energy densities beneath. And that periodically, due to entropy, these universes are absorbed by the ones above them, and the matter is then consumed into the upper parallel universe or concentric universe. I think this is what the Bible speaks of in Revelation when it talks about the earth and the heavens as we know it will pass away in a great rushing heat at the end of the millennium or slightly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And a new earth and a new heaven will replace that, as though there is a model for our earth and universe. And that model is transferred to another, universe, you know, a bubble, around us. And that kind of somewhat brain theory, B-R-A-N-E theory of the alternate universes around us. So anyway, that's what I would explore and not spend all that money that they're doing. I think that that's just a brute force method. And when you pump energy in over a period of time, a longer period of time into a system that stores it, say like in the atom that you're, or the subatomic particle you're playing with, mm-hmm. you can then move and, you know, almost keep them stationary if you want and just pump up their energy until you cause them to get into the universe.
Right.
But that would be going up instead of down the scale.
That is super, super fascinating. Okay. What about, your research is just so incredible and you were out always looking for new things and trying to come up with, what's going to happen next. But, and I know that you're a biblical student as well, as am I. I think everybody should be a student of all of these ancient texts. But, so what, if you had to lay some predictions about kind of, the revelations aspect. Last time you were on the show, we were talking about the potential of the Antichrist having the name Solomon. And I know we talked about this a little off air the other day, but we do now have the king of Saudi Arabia, King Solomon. And I thought, you know, in between speaking to you and that revelation coming out, it definitely perked my ears and made me think, well, maybe Stan was onto something there. But I'm definitely interested in what you think is going on geopolitically there in the Middle East and kind of where we are in terms of, a potential end times or a potential revelation. Just kind of where do you think we're at right now today?
Well, I think we're exceedingly close to the revelation of the man of sin, Antichrist. And now, of course, after him comes the false prophet who does even worse things. But the Antichrist will be a military leader. He will be a strong force, and he will unify the nations of the world using technology given to him, according to Daniel, by worship an alien god, it says. Mm-hmm. And that means a not from around here super being, which we think is going to be Satan and his team of minions who will help rule the lands or the nations that will be traded by the Antichrist to them for access to technology to defeat all the armies of the world. Mm-hmm. Now, we are very close to the moment when the people of Earth, more than the governments, the people of Earth will say, we have the threat of climate change that's killing our food supply. We have threats from various viral and bacterial sources to become pandemic or epidemics, you know. Mm-hmm. And we have a financial crisis, which is at our door as we speak now. Then the world economies are at a breaking point.
Yes, sir.
This year. And we have threat of nuclear war over the Middle East tensions between Israel and sort of the United States and Islam. Mm-hmm. Of late, our administration has turned the United States more towards supporting Islam than Israel. So I don't know if the great, quote-unquote, Satan of the West is as big a threat as it was to the Islamic community. But certainly Russia will keep an eye, is keeping an eye on the United States and wants to remove the U.S. from a threatening position should Russia have to move into the Middle East, into the middle of the conflict down there, mm-hmm. to support treaties it has with various Islamic nations like, you know, Iran and Syria and Iraq.
Right.
And these things tell me that, that the ISIS situation, and they will be defeated. But right now, the defeat will come mainly at the hands of a military genius. And I now, a quote from Newsweek, who had the front cover of Qasem Soleimani, General Soleimani, who is an Iranian general, heads up the Quds force, you know, and Daniel says he'll honor a god of forces. Mm. It's just a rather interesting parallel there. But this Qasem Soleimani, his last name is a derivative of Solomon. Mm-hmm. He's a military genius. Into Iraq and helping the Iraqis, and they think even though he's Iranian that he's cool because he's helping, and he even fought against U.S. troops in the area and won battles.
Hmm.
Now, this fellow, if he defeats ISIS and gets a major credit for it, then the world will say, hey, who could be better than this guy? I mean, if the United States couldn't beat ISIS,
right,
but he did.
Right.
And my attention is really focused on him. I had looked at Abu Suleiman, which is Australia that went into Syria and is now number two in the al-Nusra front, which is assisting Qasem Soleimani. But I don't think that Abu Suleiman has quite very knowledge and tactical knowledge that Qasem Soleimani does. So
okay.
King Salman over in Saudi Arabia, no, he's not a problem either. I think he's too old and doesn't have the strength. Soleimani does.
Okay. Well, then, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to bring that up, and I know I touched on it a little bit yesterday when you and I were talking, but when Abdullah died, there were a lot of reports about a prophecy that has to do with the King Abdullah dying. They said that I should preface this by saying that the people who are saying this were the Iranian government and basically Hezbollah. We're saying that once King Abdullah had died, that Saudi Arabia would hide his death for 40 days, and then on the announcement of his death, the 12th Imam would show up, and it would also correlate to a major offensive, you know, from against Israel by Iran and by Hezbollah. And now, after his death, we saw the airstrikes in Syria by Israel on the Iranian generals and on the Hezbollah. And now we've kind of seen, it just seems like it's escalating a little bit now between Hezbollah, Iran, and Israel. And I'm wondering, if you have any information about that prophecy, or if it is even a prophecy, or if you've heard about it, or if you think that situation might actually get worse as we're going into the future, Stan.
Well, look, the prophecy speaks for itself. Iran, I mean, the Imam, it didn't say he was coming from Saudi Arabia. It just said
right.
He would be revealed.
Correct.
And the Imam is going to be a powerful force like King Solomon legends paint him to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they point to Iran in that prophecy tells me, Israel is, has killed some of the generals in Iran. The surviving one, Qasem Soleimani.
Oh, you're joking. He was there and he survived?
Of course.
Oh my gosh, Stan, I didn't know that. Wow. Okay. Continue.
So do you see what I'm saying? There's things afoot as we speak.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a pretty amazing piece of insight there. I appreciate you dropping that on us, Stan. Okay. So we've got about 6 minutes left. What's on your radar right now? What's driving your research and motivation at this point, Stan? I mean, is it Yellowstone? Is it Nibiru?
More of my radar is on the finances of the world and the horrible loss of income in the U.S. So many people, so many, many Americans are hungry and are on such tight budgets that they're chewing up their savings. I mean, in the same position, we're certainly not flush at all. We're going backward every month. So I know from looking at factors here and overseas, the collapse of the world economy, perhaps the closure of the banking systems of the world is sometime this year, maybe later on, and a near and present danger, which I'm trying to figure out how to advise people, not only ourselves, but other people,
right,
what they need to do to prepare for this. And of course, other than getting money, but the things you will need into your home and physical possession is the best advice.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that we've talked about that for years about Holly's book on preparation, the Dare to Prepare book.
Yeah. That I was just going to say that would be step one as far as I'm concerned. I've asked some friends, what books are necessary for prepping, and it's amazing how often Holly's book, Dare to Prepare, comes up in that list. I mean, it's usually at the very, very top, and I can't recommend that book highly enough. So,
even government first responder schools have been using it as a teaching manual.
Right, so, exactly. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's kind of what's on my radar is the threat to us, personally in our banks and our savings, the food and water that we will need during a crisis. And secondarily to that is, threat of civil war. We've had enough of our current administration.
Yes.
And revolt. And at a certain point, when families are hungry, people says, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You can see a revolution, a sudden uprising is imminent.
Well, I think we're starting to see that all around the world. I mean, look at just what just happened in Greece. You know, they've been under the thumb of austerity from the Troika for so long, and now, you know, a popular uprising has taken place. They've got a new prime minister there, and it does look like he is going to stand with the people and stick it to the banks. And, you know, we also had that article about Croatia today. I don't know if you saw that, but Croatia just eliminated the debt of its poorest 60,000 people, just wiped them off the books, called up all the telecommunications and the, you know, the city providers and said, we're going to wipe these books and we're not going to reimburse you guys, and you're just going to have to take it and deal with it. And I thought, man, is this the beginning potentially of a global jubilee, which I think we're kind of in the time frame for. Do you want to talk a little bit about the jubilee or about the Shemitah and some of kind of where we're at in history in terms of that?
The Shemitah, well, we're the fourth one, the last one of this four blood moons is set to occur in September, I think, of this year. And didn't we say that September?
I think it is September, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, although significant historical events happened around Israel during these blood moon series, especially the series of four, like we had now, two last year and two this year,
right?
Quite rare. And they don't occur on the exact date thereof, but within proximity of those events. Mm-hmm. It's like a prophetic sign in the sky that says, look out, it's coming. And with that around the end of this year, and with other experts saying that our economy and various other things are going to tank, you know, later this year, maybe that's what we're going to see, is the beginning of the Great Tribulation period toward the end of this year.
Wow.
Of course, already started, but our world situation with all those crisis curves is coming to the attention of the people, you know, down at a personal level.
Yes.
Over the Super Bowl game. I mean, you know, it's becoming obvious. And people are saying, solve it. Help us. Who can get rid of these stupid politicians?
Yes.
Who are just, you know, just clowns. That puts us as a people, as a, you know, across the planet, that puts us at a very delicate position where we will accept any solution, you know, if it brings the price isn't too dear. And that means that an Antichrist, alien brothers, elder brothers in space can zoom on in publicly and say, look, we're here. We're going to step in and help you because your governments are useless. And people will say, you got that right.
Right.
And we're going to get rid of those Illuminati guys. Oh, you got that right.
Right.
You know, and we're going to help you get rid of disease and protect the planet from a meteor strike. And, oh, wow. And we've got free energy. Oh, hey. And that's the danger. That's the point we're approaching toward the end of this year.
Well, how do we avoid that, though? I mean, how do we know when that happens that that's not the right answer?
When the man, you know, the Solomon of this age, the Antichrist, and people are asked to turn over their bank accounts, you know, to the New World Order banking system, mm-hmm. and to swear allegiance to this new leader who's bringing peace on the planet.
That's a pretty good indicator.
At that time.
Yeah, roger that.
You avoid that.
Roger that. Thank you so much for joining us again, Stan. This has been an absolutely wonderful hour. Thank you again.
You bet, JD. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's been it. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I cannot tell you how awesome it is to get a chance to talk to Stan Deo. I hope you guys enjoyed it out there. Tomorrow, Richard Sauter will be on the show, and obviously we're going to be talking about underground and underwater bases, so it'll be kind of a pickup from where we are right now. So take care, everybody. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. Thanks for being here.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.